Have you ever felt that pang of disappointment when you couldn't add a ticket to your collection because it was digital? Or maybe you just lost it? Well, StubForge.com is here to change that. Imagine this: tickets that not only look but feel like the real deal. Because each ticket from StubForge is printed on the same quality stock that Ticketmaster uses and printed with genuine ticket printers. It's like holding a piece of the concert, the game, or the show right in your hands. But StubForge isn't just about replacing tickets. With the easy-to-use interactive designer, you can create custom tickets for anything, from concerts to sports games, pregnancy announcements, or parties. Why not make your invitations stand out with tickets that are as unique as your event? And if you're trying to complete a back catalogue of missing tickets, StubForge offers bulk discounts to make it both easy and affordable. With StubForge, you can once more give your loved ones physical tickets and see their eyes light up instantly at the best gift you can give. So whether you're looking to reignite your ticket collection, craft the perfect gift, or send the coolest invites, head over to StubForge.com. Start creating today and see how StubForge makes every ticket a story worth saving. Visit StubForge.com and start making tickets today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A big part of what we share in the Bravery Academy is times in our lives where we really get challenged. Becoming a new parent is very much one of those milestone moments. In today's episode, I'm joined by Dr. Victoria Thompson, and we talk about all the things that you can do to help reset, communicate, and connect over that time of being a new parent.
Welcome back, Dr. Vic. I feel like this episode could be a little bit daunting for you. How many weeks are you now into your pregnancy?
I'm 26.
26.
So I don't know, like an eggplant or something?
It's a lovely eggplant size. And today's episode, we're going to be talking about that last trimester, which you're not quite there yet, but it's going to be coming up. And then stages around motherhood and density changes and all the things that can shift, but for women, but then also making sure you look at the big picture for the whole family unit and then the community beyond that. So today's going to be a great episode to look at the how we manage stress over that really significant milestone in life. So tell me how you're feeling at the moment at that 26 weeks.
Before we started recording, I was just complaining about my back, and Emma's trying to give us physio advice that was well received. But look, I'm feeling okay. I think even going into this last part of my second trimester, the third trimester, it feels quite daunting. And, you know, time is ticking on. And now I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I need to, you know, start thinking about getting ready and setting stuff up. But yeah, look, I'm not there yet, so I can't really speak too much from my own experience, but I have researched and can speak from experiences that I've had in my practice, but also with my network.
Absolutely. And in my experience, obviously, on the, again, the other side, coming out after the trimesters, 13-year-old now and 10-year-old, I did check the ages because they obviously do change. And I actually had to reflect back on that time, looking back at each pregnancy, and it is so different. And I think there's so much learning from when you go into that first one to the second. And my mum had six kids. I don't know how she did that, because I think I had my first kid and looked at her and just went, why would you go back that more? So there's a real, for me, a learning of my own. But I've worked with a lot of women, both from that stage of, you know, just having new babies and recovering to years and decades later, and still the impact of this time of our lives. And what we can do. And I think one of the big parts of the Bravery Academy, what we do here, is around figuring out how do we give ourselves awareness in these moments of change. And this is a time when we're used to trying to find that equilibrium in life, right? And particularly as women, trying to find that balance and the dance between our, like, the system of stability and change. There is just so much change in that last trimester, birthing, and then that first few months, that it's really always going to be a bit chaotic, isn't it?
Yes, I do imagine so. And chaotic on many fronts, I think, in terms of sort of not only having this baby that, you know, probably had no idea how to look after at the beginning, and this sort of whole change to the family system, even thinking about, what am I going to do with my dog? What's he going to do when I'm tied up with the baby?
So there's quite a bit of, and this is one thing that, I mean, I was researching and going back to sort of stats around this, around the mental load for mothers, right? So there's often this gender challenge with that. So you're already kind of pre-planning and thinking of some stuff. So, you know, with an eggplant, you're in it all the time, 24/7. You can't take the baby off and forget about that there. It's either kicking you or taking a lot of energy or changing the way that your body feels. And I think this next trimester, that third one already, is an important one, understanding, again, the changes that are happening in the body, particularly around fatigue. Have you experienced fatigue much during the first part of pregnancy?
Oh, my first trimester was hard with the fatigue, for sure. Then I had some beautiful weeks, some really great weeks in the middle. And now I'm starting to get a bit sort of more uncomfortable and tired, I suppose, as I move towards the next trimester and I get bigger and my muscles start to relax and all of those things. So, yeah. I mean, it's a lot, isn't it? And you also have, well, in a lot of cases, majority probably of cases, is that most mothers are working whilst trying to navigate through this period of anticipation and uncomfortableness and fatigue and stress. And it's quite a lot for people. And, you know, there are lots of cases where people don't have a good support network or a reliable partner or any partner at all, that they might be embarking on this journey alone. And it must be incredibly hard.
I think that's a really good place to start from, because it's going to be a real continuum of experiences, right? When you look at somebody coming into this around their journey for the first two trimesters and getting pregnant in the first place, what position they are in that sort of final stage is going to be so unique to them. I think that's around making sure you figure out for you, again, what needs you need to meet at that time. And I think support's a really big one. And because we can sometimes live in these isolated communities and can be in these little wee spaces where we haven't got as much of a village around us, I think really in that last trimester, figuring out how you can build that village, if you can, to find that support. And there's a lot more happening, I've noticed, particularly in my areas compared to, you know, a decade plus ago when I was having children. And there's much more around honouring the woman in the last trimester. Have you seen much more of that as well? Not just baby shower, but actually really nurturing the mother into that next stage.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, I think it's becoming more popular. You know, even if you think about sort of the types of baby shower gifts and things that people consider, is that they're also considering, you know, what does the mum need?
Yeah.
And I do think that over recent years, there is an increased awareness of our isolation now when we're having children, you know, that didn't used to be, I think we talked about that last episode, but didn't used to be the case. And so perhaps we are starting to kind of recognize how challenging it is and how isolating it can be and how much support the mum needs. But also, I think some increasing awareness of potential stress on partner, because you know, in more contemporary times, the partner, you know, I'm talking, let's talk about heterosexual relationships in this case, the father is actually tending to be expected to take on more than they would have done, you know, 20-30 years ago. The roles were a little more clearly defined, so that's quite an interesting dynamic as well. And of course, a really good conversation to have around, well, what are our roles in our relationship when this baby is here? You know, what do you do? What do I do? And that's in all couples, right? Because then if you've got same-sex couples, how does that work? You know, how do you split the load? Who goes to work? Who stays home? It's definitely a very useful conversation to have before the baby arrives.
I think it should be again, in the plunket or the birthing practice that we go through, is figuring out how do you sit down and have a conversation around those roles and not having to just define by gender, like you said. I think you've got a really good point. Even 10 years ago from when I had my last child, where I was still taking in that load of the normal household stuff and the invisible load and then doing the bookings of the children into everything. I think there's a real change in how men are seen to be showing up in these pregnancies and raising children. And that's really beautiful. But again, like you said, there's a load on them and they're trying to fit this new mold of they're supposed to be carrying everything, you know, financially possibly, the stress of that, the lack of sleep, they might be getting up in the night as well, the baby, and then figuring out how they navigate through this next stage. So I think the expectations and often stealth expectations, this is really important because when you have that new baby, you're going to be so tired, you're going to be running on empty, and it's really easy to kind of go back and resort back to the behaviors that aren't going to nurture and nourish that relationship. And that's when you need to be able to come in and back and say, well, what do we need to be doing right now to repair or to make, help us both navigate this in a better way?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why I think it is really beneficial to have those upfront conversations before you get there, because you're right. You know, when we're tired and worn out, that is not our best communication. Yeah. We are much more quick to anger or irritation, losing our cool, essentially. And so I think that having those kinds of conversations as much as possible. I mean, you also don't know what's coming.
You don't know.
That's lovely for anxiety, isn't it? Yeah. The uncertainty. But as best you can, trying to work out how to navigate those things and how you might nurture your relationship with your partner. Actually, when I was thinking about this podcast and looking into some of the research around it, I think that the stats within the sort of first 3 years after having a baby, people's sense of the quality of their relationship declined. And that's in like 67% of couples, which is massive and gave me some food for thought. I actually texted my partner and said, I think we got to have a conversation now about how we're going to, you know, I think we should have a conversation about how we're going to nurture our relationship during this time or some ideas that we might have, because it's quite a daunting figure. And yeah, and I guess in my practice as well, I've seen the impacts of children, both young children and teenagers, on relationships and how much it can degrade the resources and resiliency of your relationship.
Very good phrase, degrade the resources and resiliency. And that's really what it comes down to, because many of us aren't armed again with these tools to deal with it when we're probably in our most challenged time, like with it being so exhausted and overwhelmed. And you don't know what you don't know when it comes to parenting. You don't know how you're going to deal with it. So I love the fact that you're already precursor to the whole baby coming and actually having these, like, you know, dates, this conversation to say, this is what my expectations are. What are yours? How do you think this is going to change me or you? And how is it going to change us? Mm. And what do you want out of this? What do you want out of being a father? What do you want out of being a mother? It's just going to be so different. And then you can keep having those conversations. That always comes back to communication. Yeah. Always. And
just tune out now.
we've just given you that. You'll be fine. Just go for pregnancy. The chickens. But it's this kind of constantness of you're going to be under stress. So what is your best version going to do on that day to help go toward that partner? And I think it's when you have resentment come in, and that comes from those unmet needs and the expectations that sort of creep in of like, well, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do the washing? You know, can you not see that I'm already been up all night or exhausted? And so having those conversations before is really important. And then figuring out a way of having those conversations without the heat and the fire in them when you have the baby is also really important.
Mm, absolutely. And trying to work out, you know, some skills ahead of time around how you do manage your irritability, your anger, and, you know, what are some skills that you can implement, whether it be taking a break, getting some space. I mean, it's hard to do, but, you know, you can go in another room or just pausing for a breath. What happens often when we're so activated is we respond immediately because it's just the intensity and the action urge that comes along with it is so strong that we tend to say things in the heat of the moment. And so how do I start to practice now, before the baby comes, at managing my irritability and my frustration? How do I learn what my signals are? How do I know that my body is becoming activated? Do I notice that I've got heat in my face or my hands clench or my jaw clenches? What are my signs and signals? Am I starting to ruminate quite a bit? What are my signs and signals that I can start to recognize so that I can move away and return? And we always must return. We say this all the time, but you must return. That I can return and show up in a way that's more consistent with, you know, how I imagine it or how I'd like to. And of course, it's not going to happen all the time, but I think it's a really helpful skill to start to practice is how do we have conflict and how do I manage conflict?
And it makes sense of why so much of that first few weeks of having a baby is when we do actually see a really spike in domestic violence and abuse. And I think I remember going through that first few weeks and then having the blanket nurse actually ask me, you know, are you okay? Are you safe at home? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I remember being like, well, why are you asking that? I didn't understand. Being in my end of it, actually how much was occurring for men and for women out there and how scary that can be and vulnerable that you are, because it's a really vulnerable time in so many ways. You know, understanding that this separation is going to be really big and that both parties are going to be going through some big transitions and it's okay to ask for help. It's actually really important to figure out how you ask for help at each stage. So before you have birth, and you're talking to your midwife, and every midwife experience is going to be different. I've had two different midwives, and learning to even communicate with them was also this practice of like, this is my need, and I don't know if I'm getting that supported right now. And I think I talked about that in the last episode around when I was unwell and trying to make sure that I had that support in it. And being able to speak up in your pregnancy is also a really big part of them being able to do it during your labor and then during your first time of being a parent. And it's just so unknown. So always practicing those relationships and communication. And I think the big part of it is that fear and the overwhelm that can come in at that last trimester, like you said, how scary that can be. And often there's that transition between work to then time off and this little bit of a period of like, oh, now what? When's the baby going to arrive? How do we deal with the uncertainty over that last few weeks before baby arrives?
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange time in ways that, I mean, having not done it sounds very appealing, but in ways it's incredibly intimidating to kind of just be in this period of unknown and waiting and I imagine incredibly uncomfortable. So I think it's got many layers to it, but I think the whole experience of pregnancy and birth and having children, I suppose, is just full of the unknown. No one's experience is consistent with someone else's. You have really no idea what your kid's going to be like. You know, are they going to be a good sleeper? Are they going to be restless? Are they going to, who knows? And so one thing that anxiety really thrives on is uncertainty. And in particular, when we're anxious, it's an intolerance of uncertainty. So this real difficulty to sit with the unknown. Mm-hmm. And that's incredibly hard because we can't predict it unless you've got a sort of scheduled C-section. You don't know when the baby's coming or what your birth is going to be like. Even with a scheduled C-section, that's not necessarily predictable. So anxiety is the intolerance of uncertainty, but also we underestimate our ability to cope and our sense of the resources that we have. Because, you know, if we start to hover out and pull back and observe the experience, I mean, this is something that women have been doing since the beginning of time, you know, that we're incredibly capable and be reassured by the idea that people have multiple children.
Yes.
And, you know, most of the time out of the room is your mother. And so one of the things that could be helpful for people to do is to actually engage with some positive birth stories, because what we tend to be overexposed to is terrible birth stories, because, you know, a lot of births are semi-unremarkable, really, in that sort of medically, of course, they're remarkable for the parents. So we often, like anything, we're kind of overexposed to negative examples of things that have gone wrong. So there are some really nice sort of podcasts around about positive birth experiences. Your midwife also may be able to provide some to you as well. So just engaging with some positive reframing around it, that can be quite reassuring. I think also what is helpful is as best you can to try and find a network of support. you know, are women who are in the same sort of stage as you are. And one of the ways that you can do that is by finding an antenatal group. And in New Zealand, at least, you know, there are some that you pay for and some that are free. And so they are quite accessible. And my understanding of those groups from friends and clients is that they actually provide a significant amount of support outside of the kind of the learning and the classes, that the probably the most valuable thing that comes out of them is the network and the shared experience, the common humanity piece. You know, I'm not suffering alone. There's others that suffer in the same way as I do.
Those groups are so important. I think one of the biggest things that can come up, though, is the comparison, even in that time for women, when you go through that pregnancy and then when you go through birth and then you go through having your baby. And that's a really good point. I remember women in those antenatal classes, or even in the, when the babies were there, we had them all lying around in the mat. And we're like, oh, is your baby doing this? What's your baby doing this? Oh, is your, oh, your baby's so small. Or your baby's so big. Or your baby's doing, you know, eating or drinking. And I think there's a really important, like, again, that's time to reflect on that your journey, your baby's going to be so unique in that experience. And I really like the idea of what you're saying there around that positive reframing before you get there. A big tool can be around using breathing, obviously, as a part of it, or hypnotherapy or meditations to help guide you into the space of feeling better before you even get to the birth experience, and showing the body that it can have the resources, reframing that fear and uncertainty.
Absolutely. And I think that we must also discriminate between normal anticipatory anxiety and non-pathological, right? And sometimes we can be too quick to pathologize things, but actually the anxiety in the circumstance is helpful, right? So I have some anxiety about giving birth. And, you know, as I said, I'm going to now have conversations with my partner about our future relationship. I have some anxiety around that. And it's not because I don't feel confident in it, but, you know, to see those stats is very daunting. And I'm sure that other people listening will feel similarly. And now I've lost my train of thought. What was I saying? Anxiety, the purpose of it. It has a purpose, right? So if we weren't anxious about birth, we wouldn't start to prepare ourselves to, like you said, to think about, well, how do I want to engage with this birth? You know, am I someone who wants to know all of the stages, or am I someone who would rather, you know, find out along the way, me? And that's not necessarily avoidance. That's just, you know, I don't know that's going to be particularly helpful for me. I feel like I might read into it too much or panic too much. And I, you know, my choice is to kind of trust the guidance of the people around me to some degree. I'm not going to be totally oblivious, but I don't feel I need to know all of the ins and outs. And so the anxiety, though, it helps us to prepare, to get the stuff ready for the baby, to get ourselves ready, get our partners ready, that the anxiety is really helpful. And that way it's normal and expected. And for some people, they won't experience anxiety about it, but the majority of people will. There is, of course, levels of anxiety that are sort of above expected levels of anxiety. And actually, we can have a specific phobia. So a specific phobia of pregnancy and childbirth. The name of it is tocophobia. And it's not that I get pregnant unexpectedly and I don't want the baby and that it's an awful experience to be pregnant and I'm fearful of childbirth. It's more often in cases where you want the baby. So it's sometimes, you know, really hard because it can mean that people don't even try and conceive despite wanting a baby because they're so scared of pregnancy and childbirth. And it can appear in sort of first-time mothers, but also can emerge in second or third-time mothers if they've had perhaps a really traumatic birthing experience. And so there are levels of anxiety that do sit outside of the norm. So signs of that, if you're pregnant, could be really ruminating on the birth, Googling all the time, seeking a lot of reassurance from others, finding it hard to settle your nerves, panic attacks, increased irritability, withdrawal, not wanting to talk about birth or the pregnancy experience, withdrawal from your partner or isolation socially. Yeah. And those sort of things are really useful to be aware of, that maybe you might need some, you know, more focused help to help you to manage that phobia and be able to give birth. So that sort of specific phobia sits in the same realm as things like needle phobia or a fear of flying, that sort of thing, where the anxiety is quite specific.
That's really good. information, people to understand the differences in the continuum that they're on and that normality, and then also that extreme version.
Our lives were never the same after we learned our 21-year-old daughter, Kristen, was murdered by her ex-boyfriend. It's a parent's worst nightmare. How much did we really know about domestic violence back then? Clearly not enough. Now we know plenty. We know domestic violence, or DV, can happen to anyone. 1 in 3 women suffer physical violence at the hands of intimate partners during their lifetimes. 1 in 3. I'm Bill Mitchell, host of the When Dating Hurts podcast. And my interviews with DV counselors, law enforcement, and especially actual DV survivors give the pandemic of domestic violence the attention it deserves. The When Dating Hurts podcast. It's a series of lives being saved.
Hi there. I'm Heather Drago.
And I'm Sarah Saunders.
We host the podcast, That's a Hard No, about saying no and setting boundaries.
So you can become that true and empowered you that this world needs. Saying no isn't just okay.
It's the key to living an authentic, fulfilling life.
I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor. So while this podcast is in no way a replacement for one-on-one therapy, I suppose I know what I'm talking about.
I'd say so. We talk about learning to say no and set healthy boundaries and how it impacts mental health, physical health, relationships, parenthood, and more.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit our website, hardnopodcast.com.
We're here to help you find your no and say it unapologetically.
That's a hard no.
So then when it comes to, like you said, the birth, I really like the fact that you've got clarity around that you don't want to know all the things for you. I want to know all the things for me.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay. Like, again, there's going to be that there's the okay to have that, but also understanding the element of the plan, which doesn't go to plan in the first place. And I think one of the things that I recommend people to do is actually to really work on how their body's going to respond over that time. And using the tools around either breath or relaxation, because your body's going to get hijacked. It's one of the most stressful experiences in going through that. So figuring out how will your mind, how will your emotions, how will your body be resourced over that experience, which could be ranging from a few hours to a few days. And it's going to be really important that you figure out for you, what do you need to kind of help cope? What's your energy need? And how are you going to communicate that to your partner? So if you do feel really like you're not coping, that they can step in as well. That's why you want those conversations beforehand, because they might have a different version of what they think the childbirth might be. You're like, you don't need the drugs. You should do the home birth, or you shouldn't do the home birth. You know, it's having really honest conversations before that point and be okay that you can change your mind and be like, hit me with the top shelf epidural, please. You know, whatever you need in the experience. And I think allowing yourself time over those weeks prepping up to the labor to actually think, right, process, talk, surround yourself with those women and know that your experience will be very unique to you and that's going to be okay.
Yeah. And I think, you know, great plan and great commentary, particularly about the birthing plan. And I know that for some people, that's an incredibly important piece for them. It gives them some sense of direction and clarity. And I guess my sense around that is, you know, do include some flexibility in that plan, because I think if one buys into the plan too much, the inevitable disappointment can spoil the experience because it didn't go, you know, as you imagined it. And like we've said throughout, is the reality of this experience is it is unpredictable and is full of uncertainty. So if we're too rigid about our birthing expectations, whether that's because we change our mind, like you said, and we're like, give me the medication, or because, you know, things don't go right with the baby and you need a C-section or you didn't want that. Think about the end goal throughout the whole experience. All I want at the end of it is to have my baby, and I'm going to have them in some way. And so I have to have some degree of flexibility around that. And I think that probably just opens up the birth experience to be perhaps a little more positive than feeling immense disappointment if things don't go to plan. Because I do hear that
a lot. it is really common for women to experience some trauma possibly in that. And now in New Zealand, we're really lucky where ACC is actually coming to the party and supporting women on that and getting the right, you know, physiotherapy and support after childbirth, which is amazing because it's a lot of change to our physical body when it happens, and let alone then having to go and have sleep deprivation and feeding a baby, so giving all the nutrients to that little human. We're actually supposed to be then healing our body after that as well. There's a lot around both the birth experience and really reaching out to your health professionals over that time to actually go, this doesn't feel right. And often we don't know what we don't know. Like, what is the normal here? So actually questioning it and being curious and flexible around it, I think is really important. Don't want to scare you with the word birth trauma either.
It is a funny thing, isn't it? Because I experience it as a clinician in practice, but the possibility of your own experience that could be traumatic. I mean, it's a daunting thing to sit with, but I mean, we must sit it to some degree. And obviously, like we said, you don't want to get sucked into that and catastrophic about it, because worrying about it doesn't prevent it or make it happen. And sometimes we can get stuck with worry like that we can believe that it, to some degree, worrying is helpful. So if I worry enough about this, I'm prepared. Or if I worry enough about this, it won't happen. Or if I don't worry about it, it's going to happen to me. And so that's when worrying as a function can become very unhelpful, because you're kind of reinforcing the worry that it's providing you some helpful function. Whereas if we use our beautiful rational minds we've got there, that actually if I worry about something enough, it's not going to change the outcome. You know, there is some benefit to my anxiety, which means I need to prepare to be flexible. And what supports have I got in place if my birth doesn't go to plan or I do experience some complications, versus pathological worrying? That behavior, that's the one that's not helpful.
They often talk a lot about the breathing with labor and a lot of the kind of panting and to hold things back. But one of the best ways you can actually manage your breathing through that process is a technique called candle breathing. So you've probably done it before with your clients, but it's that very slow breath out the mouth through pursed lips. What it does is it helps to recover between the moments to allow you to navigate it. And I think that's kind of what I want people to see, is you're kind of like riding that wave through that whole labor experience. And as long as you can come with those intentions of, well, curiosity is probably a hard word to think about with that, but definitely flexibility and the openness to being with the flow, and to be able to be with that intention of meeting that little human at the end. And that can help to ride the kind of peaks and troughs that come with it. And knowing that you can kind of resource yourself to coming back to that breath over that time, which is why, again, doing some meditations and mindfulness practice before you get to there can make it easier for you to go back to that nervous system restoration. So that when you get to that next phase, those first 6 weeks, which are, you know, again, chaotic, overwhelming and unknown, then slow the body down and take moments.
Yeah. And like you said, you know, equipping yourself before the time. I think often when we feel, you know, I see it quite a lot in my practice, and I'm sure you do as well. And just from, you know, friends and experiences, people try and use breathing or meditation in moments of acute crisis.
Yeah. In that moment, right.
Yeah. And what I guess you're encouraging people to do is practice beforehand. Start to develop those techniques before the moment of crisis, because that's when we're just unable to access that. And it's not a, you know, we haven't practiced it. It's not a learned skill. And that's when people are like, oh, it's not helpful to me.
Yes. Yeah. I think that it's to get a better baseline, because if we can get a better baseline in our body and our nervous system, then that's going to make it even easier to be able to come back to me. What I need to do to deal with that stress in the moment. What about for that first few weeks of babies? What has your advice been to the new mothers? And I know that you're going to be stepping into that as well to help them cope with the challenge and stress and identity changes as well.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a massive one, isn't it? It's this whole shift in identity that starts to take place, especially if you're going on sort of extended maternity leave, or your orientation of your day changes entirely. You know, at the moment it's about, you know, when I start work and when I finish work and what am I having for dinner? So my whole sense of my day is going to be changed. So that in itself is quite a thing to manage. If that was just in isolation, but of course, there's going to be many complexities to that period. And I think something that's really important to think about and consider is the possibility that you might experience postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety. Postpartum depression, or PND, postnatal depression, is, I think, the old term, but I'm not sure, is more commonly talked about than postpartum anxiety. But the two are semi-common. So I think that before going into that period, this is always the advice, isn't it? Do it all now. And just set it up for the baby and, you know, keep working. But, you know, in ideally, we do kind of just want to verse ourselves a little bit in what that can look like. And maybe your partner, if you have one, and or sort of close family as well, just to help you look out for sort of any signs and symptoms that something that you might be struggling with. And I think, like you said before, you know, your team around you, your medical team are quite good. I mean, at least from my experience thus far around asking around that, but we can't always rely on that. So it is good, or that you would necessarily feel confident enough to address that with them, because of course it is quite a worrying thing for people, and one that can be shameful or embarrassing for people. But I think what is helpful is to understand, well, what might that look like? Well, yes, it can look like a few different things. And unfortunately, with sleep deprivation, sometimes it can be quite hard to tell because some of the things are quite similar. So what I would encourage people to think about is, well, do I have any really clear vulnerability factors for this? And that can be things like pre-existing history of anxiety and depression. Ask your, if you have a relationship with them, ask your mom or your sisters or your cousins or whoever it is, if they had any experience with that, because that is some evidence that it is familial and that there is some familial link there. People who are more at risk tend to be people who've had their own previous experience with another baby, familial experience, or people who are solo parenting can make people a lot more vulnerable. Low socioeconomic status, that sort of thing, you know, marital or couple, whatever you've got, dysfunction, relationship dysfunction, that can also make us more vulnerable. So just having a think about, well, what are my vulnerability factors here? And what do I need to look out for? Things like, you know, I'm really struggling to bond with my baby. And that's not always a sign of it, but I can talk more about that in a second. Mm-hmm. Irritability, withdrawing from others, a sense of being disconnected from sort of myself and the world, poor concentration, sadness, all of these things as well, you know, are relatively common. And so what you also want to think about, like we said before, is how long is this enduring for? And I think if you're feeling like that for about a month to 6 weeks, I would probably go and seek some support. But, you know, at any time in your postpartum journey, if you start to notice those sorts of changes, do let people know, because at least then you can, you know, your midwife or your partner or your GP, they can monitor how you're going with it. And it may be that it resolves. But we do really start to worry about it. It's sort of about that 4 to 6 month period where it feels quite stable and unrelenting. That maybe, you know, there might be something going on there. And there are some great supports out there for postpartum depression and anxiety. So it's by no means, you know, that's it. Your whole postpartum experience is ruined. We have medication and supports and things that you can access during that time, but just be vigilant.
And I think it's also really important to look at, well, obviously that's for the females, but there's a really high amount of men, right? It's going through being triggered as well at that stage.
Absolutely. And I think when you're thinking about being the pregnant person and your identity change, it is a slower transition, isn't it? Because you start to see your body change, start to feel it. I can feel all the baby kicking and moving around, and I'm going to my appointments, and it's more of a lean in. Whereas for a lot of partners or the other parent, is that sense doesn't really come in until the baby is right there. And then it's like, holy shit, you know, there is this really intense shock to the identity. And what tends to happen when the baby is born is there's much more reliance on one parent, perhaps the breastfeeding parent or the parent who's at home the most. And so the other person can be feeling sort of on the periphery or a little secondary or a little out of the loop. So that can be an incredibly challenging time. And what is great, and we're in New Zealand, is that there are some great supports
out there for men struggling with postpartum depression or anxiety. And like we're saying, it doesn't have to be the person who birthed the child. I found a resource for men that's available in New Zealand. And I'm just going to double check the name here and we can put it in the show notes.
Amazing.
Well, maybe we'll just pop it in the show notes because I don't know where I wrote it. We'll put it in the show notes. There are some resources for becoming a father and what that means and responsibility and how do we balance that role. Most of the time that the mum is staying at home doing maternity leave and the dad is going out to work, they're going to be working, maybe sleep deprived, depending on what your sleeping arrangements are. And then they're going to work a full day and then they've got to come home and look after the child and the mum. And so it's a big demand on their resources as well. And perhaps sometimes they feel quite forgotten about, they're not the primary focus of the midwife, GP.
Mm. And then there's the other big stressor, which is actually the change in your relationship and intimacy. And I think that's a really big one for people to actually, again, talk about beforehand, even though that can be uncomfortable, and figure out how you're still going to create time for each other. It doesn't mean having sex either, because to be honest, all the time the body's like, I'm so exhausted and tired. I don't have that even in me, or I've been hurt during the birthing process. And so it's having expectations and discussions around what my body is going to be okay with after that. And that isn't also a rejection to a partner. There's lots of different things to talk about around, okay, well, what if my body's not getting up to it? I've had a baby leached on me and crying and birthing and pooing everywhere. The last thing I want is actually to have somebody come over and be on me. So how do we still create, like you said, this relationship, that connection through this really challenging time?
Well, there is some interesting research on physical touch and affection in reducing rates of postpartum anxiety and depression. So there's some good evidence there for that. But, like you said, you may not really want physical touch afterwards. And I think that this is one of the most common challenges experienced by couples post-baby is this window afterwards where, in all likelihood, you have less sex. And for most couples, the frequency of sex has already been reduced.
Slowly reducing.
But over time. And so mothers, like you said, there's often some physical changes that happen after birth. It's a wound, or also we can experience sort of changes in vaginal dryness or more difficulty orgasming. And so for men, that's not necessarily the case, that their desire to have sex may be similar or near to, whereas it's just not that for the mother. And there's some evolutionary stuff behind that makes a lot of sense, right? Yep. That, don't get pregnant now because you've got to look after the other baby. But for men, and not so much in theory. And so those different expectations around sex and intimacy are really important to be aware of. In all likelihood, you've already observed them throughout your pregnancy. So hopefully have had some conversations around how you're both feeling about that and navigating it. But intimacy, I think, starts to change for people, that the level of connection starts to change, and intimacy perhaps can be found in different ways. So I think things to really consider, a couple of ideas are positive reinforcement. We all need it. Thank you so much for cooking dinner. It's been so helpful for me. Or, oh gosh, I think it's so lovely to watch you with them. You're going to be such a good father. You're such a good father. Or, gosh, I really appreciate your support, telling your mother not to come around today or whatever it is, right? And so the positive reinforcement, and also, on each other's physical appearance, because that's going to be changed and challenged. But, I think that's a whole episode in itself, isn't it? But, around celebrating each other as you fulfill these new roles. Other things to think about is try not to miss those bids for connection, bids for conversation that your partner might be setting up with you, asking you questions or querying you about what they're doing or whether they're doing it right. That's all bids for connection. And if they try and hold your hand, it's bid for connection. And when we start to shoot those down too much, that's when it can be quite challenging for the relationship. Yeah. And connection can be found in different things now. How do you navigate that struggle together? How did you navigate pregnancy or the birth, or how did you do it as a team, and how are you navigating sleep and the night feeds and whatever it is that you now are established as this team, and you're here to look after this
child for the next foreseeable. And so how do you, change the sense of intimacy, that actually intimacy might be found more in the teamwork and the connection in that way, and celebrating the milestones rather than as sex as much. You know, research does suggest that by about 6 months, 89%-ish of women are back to wanting to have sex. So it's not over for us.
No, it's not. So I think there's been some really good awareness moments today. There's going to be anxiety. There's going to be overwhelm as we step into this new phase of parenting and growth. There's so much more to talk about on this. So I think it's kind of more about leave it for there today. Is there any last comments you would say for new parents navigating this stage?
I'll let you know.
The follow-up episode.
Look, I think take each day at a time. Try as best you can to tolerate the lack of control that we have, and find control or sense of control and direction and things that are within your remit. So good conversations with your partner, with yourself, you know, practicing your skills, not only for, you know, your breathing for childbirth, but also managing distress and conflict later on. And most importantly is find compassion for yourself. And if you've got one, your co-parent.
Love it. And I'm so excited to see how you navigate this next very thrilling stage of life.
Yes.
Looking forward to hearing about his arrival in a few months' time. Thanks, Dr. Vic. Thank you for tuning in to the Bravery Academy. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. And if you're looking to take your support for the podcast to the next level, visit patreon.com/thebraveryacademy to access exclusive content and get early access to our upcoming episodes. Your feedback means the world to us. So please take a moment to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you for being part of the Bravery Academy community. Stay brave, stay curious, and keep challenging yourself to grow. Until next time.